Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 42. This is Dave, and I'm kind of lone gunning it because Barry's in Hawaii. Lucky bum. And Josh is, I think, still stalking Mary Elizabeth Winstead. But in a way, I think I kind of upgraded because I have two very special guests with me this week. If you'd be so kind as to introduce yourselves.
Yes, I am T. Morris. I'm the author of the Billabub Battings Mysteries and the Moravi Saga.
And I'm Philippa Valentine from Wellington, New Zealand, the author of Chasing the Bird at chasingthebird.com.
Yay, and we won't be mentioning that more, not at all, I'm sure.
No.
We don't believe in pimping here, not at all.
No.
Lovely. This will be our kind of podcast, Pip, our kind of podcast.
Well, I invited both of them on because I've been listening to both of their audiobooks, and they're both outstanding, and you need to listen to them, as well as we've got Double Trouble coming up, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Double Trouble coming up on August 8th, 2008. In fact, I can give you all an accurate countdown, 12 days, 15 hours, 53 minutes from this recording. So there you go.
And there you go. All right, well, we'll skip what we watched this week, blah, 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 just because. We'll go into what came out in theatrical this week. We've got Step Brothers and X-Files. I want to believe this movie doesn't suck, but it sounds like it does.
Oh, which one?
X-Files.
Oh, really? They're not giving it, the critics are not giving it good reviews?
It's not getting any love at all, apparently.
Oh. Really?
Ooh. Is, yeah. This is deja vu, isn't it?
That's heartbreaking. That is heartbreaking because I really wanted X-Files. I was really wanting this X-Files movie to be good.
Yeah.
Because the last one was okay. Mm. I remember, you know, being there for opening night. I remember going in. I remember walking out thinking, why am I not blown away? I should be blown away. What happened?
It was kind of meh. Meh.
Meh. Yeah. Meh. Meh.
Now, are both of you big fans of the show in general?
Oh, yes. Well, okay. For the first few seasons, anyway.
thank you. Yeah, Pip and I have had this conversation before. Huge fan of the show until, I want to say it was season 5, when Chris Carter suddenly got stuck on this, you know, the government is out to get us kick. I can't remember if that was before or after the season where every other episode parodied itself. and you know, I'm like, okay, the occasional let's poke fun at ourselves, I like those episodes. But there was one season where it felt like every time I tuned in, I was seeing an episode that was this all tongue-in-cheek, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more kind of episode. And I want to say that was the 5th season. Mm-hmm. Once
David Duchovny left, it was
downhill for
me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when Duchovny left the show, I was like, well, I'm done with this. And I didn't even see Endgame. Did not even see Endgame.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, but when I saw the trailers for this, you know, and then you bring in the Billy Connolly factor, I said, oh, this actually looks like a surprise. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, apparently he plays a pedophile priest.
Yay, Billy!
Man.
He goes from Fido to...
Oh, I loved Fido.
Yes.
Even though he didn't have a line. Did he have a line in there?
Yeah.
Or when he was...
Timmy's in trouble?
Yeah. that was funny.
Wow.
And we've done all the
way. Stuck with zombies, you reckon?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Oof. So, yeah, I mean, I'll probably catch it at some point. We're recording this on Saturday night. I usually catch stuff Sunday morning, so I might tomorrow. We'll see. I'm suddenly not in near as much of a hurry.
I'm going to reserve my judgment because I know that Hancock got some Hancock got some love hate, and I honestly enjoyed the film immensely.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, I know that people tend to come out and pan things, and I think with the way Chris Carter ended the X-Files, where he was saying, yes, everything will be, I mean, I didn't even see it, but I remember when he was saying, everything's going to be answered, I remember saying to people, you're not going to walk away with any answers.
Of course not.
You're not going to walk away with any answers, because Chris Carter has written himself into a corner with a padlock.
Tied himself up a knot.
Yeah, exactly. He's got the ball gag. Exactly.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. We'll see. I don't know. I'll hopefully we'll chat over Twitter about this. I'm sure once we all see it. But let's say the DVDs that are coming out this week, because there's actually some decent stuff. Of course, you do have the crap, but it's all good. We've got the Rolling Stones documentary, Shine a Light. We've got done by Martin Scorsese, Witchblade, the complete series. We finally.
Oh, yeah.
That's now big with talking. The geek. Yeah, that's the geek crowd right there.
Wow. You hit the soft spot with the T.
So if it's on Apple TV, damn it, I'm going out this weekend and getting myself an Apple TV.
There you are. Then we've got Dark City, the director's cut. Yeah, I cannot wait to see this. This was my first DVD that I bought along with Aliens, the special edition, was the original cut of Dark City.
The original Aliens, the special edition of Aliens, that should have been what came out. I mean, that was the first time I saw a director's cut of something, and I thought, wow, that was better. That was better.
Yeah.
Than the actual theatrical release. But Pip, have you ever seen Dark City? It features the Kiwi, Richard O'Brien.
I don't think I have. Okay, right.
It's good.
Add it to my queue.
Yeah. It's good. It's screwed up. It is very high in the creepy factor. Very high in the creepy factor, but very, very cool.
And it has Jennifer Connelly.
That too.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, and she's good at it, yeah, as if she's not good at anything. To go from the highbrow to the lowbrow, we've got a Harold and Kumar Escape from Guantanamo Bay, rated and unrated 2 days. If for no reason than NPH, really, that's...
Yeah.
I have a feeling that's going to bounce, that's going to be huge, mostly because of him and Dr. Horrible.
Yeah.
Because, dear sweet Dr. Horrible. Mm. Oh. Yes. My pick of the week, personally, Freakazoid, the complete first season, is finally coming out on DVD.
Jeez, that takes me back. Wow.
You know, okay. It is so self-aware and gets people who have no business making fun of themselves. It is beautiful. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes. Heck, I remember when Mark Hamill showed up.
In the fanboy episode.
In the fanboy episode. God bless him, man. God bless Mark Hamill. Good man. Good man.
I finally get to get rid of my bootleg, so. Not that you... Okay, yeah, I had it. And then back to more crap, we've got Lost Boys, the Tribe, because we need Corey and Corey.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
The Corys? Oh, jeez. Take your dignity and slink off into the night.
That would entail that they had dignity in the first place.
Exactly. I think they lost it in the 80s.
They lost it on Dream a Little Dream. I think that was the one. It was at Rock and Roll High School when Corey, I think it was Corey Haim. No, was it Corey Haim? One of them was wearing Michael Jackson's jacket and doing the whole Thriller thing as they were going down the hallway. That mentally scarred me, as you can tell. I vividly remember that, and I was like, make the white boy stop. Oh, my God. You know, you're talking about stuff that's coming out on DVD. You know what I would really... I have a bootleg of it, but you know what I would really like to see come out on DVD? Brimstone.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember? Yeah, that's the thing I've noticed about the show Brimstone. Everybody either remembers it or was like, what's that?
That was a really interesting show.
It's a brilliant show. And Fox, of course, in their infinite wisdom, killed it, especially when it started to get interesting. But this was this could have been, had it had the same passion as Firefly, and the following of Joss Whedon, I think it could have continued, but unfortunately it's just I think I'm gonna keep my bootlegs close, but anyway, yeah, so I'm sorry, go ahead. What else is coming out?
We've got four titles left. We got Doomsday, okay. Stuff blowing Doomsday. Up, blood, death, destruction, mayhem.
Oh, Hutch blew that. Hutch kind of toured a new one on Twitter. I remember.
Jason, yeah, I think our guys did too, if I remember correctly. I think Barry saw it, and yeah, he didn't have kind things to say. We've got War Games, the 25th anniversary edition. Oh, I remember seeing this in the theater. I love this movie.
Me too. Many, many times.
Oh yep. Yes.
Yeah.
And that this is like the Stroll Down Memory Lane week. We've got now got also Tiny Toon Adventures Season 1, Volume 1.
Oh, yeah! Tiny Toon!
4 discs of goodness. I mean, which means I'm going to have to buy it, for sure. And then Never Back Down. Okay.
Never Back Down.
It's like Havoc meets Fight Club, but not as good.
Okay.
Which isn't that good of a combination in the first place.
Brad Pitt in it.
Yeah. A bunch of uppity rich white kids who like to fight a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds like my school days.
Now you're busting on Havoc. You're not busting on Fight Club, right?
Oh, no. Fight? But trying to...
I'll say Fight... Oh, come up with the equivalent. I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. It's like Fight Club, but with maximum suck.
Gotcha. Ooh, ouch.
Yeah.
It's like Fight Club, but it's shit. Okay, I understand. That's no problem.
Yeah, our running gag is that one of our guys, Barry, will say never back down, then I have to say never surrender, just cause.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Duh.
I see you got your shirts off again. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I love Galaxy Quest. Okay, yeah, we don't rabbit trail it all around here. moving into news, Comic-Con's going on. Have you been following all the stuff that's been hitting?
I've been seeing a few things. It's making me jealous.
Well, the first crappy news is that apparently we're getting Scream 4.
Scream 4?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because we need another Scream movie.
Answering all the questions. And I hate to say it, I think I may have actually mentioned this last week. Oh, well.
What questions?
Yeah. But
the question is, why are you making another one? Do they have the answer to that?
That was my question. That was my big question.
Yeah, I think we did talk about this last week. My apologies to our listeners. let's get to the good news. Did you hear about the Tron 2 trailer?
Tron 2?
Yes, they had a teaser that showed at Comic-Con.
Oh. I heard there was going to be a Tron remake, but not Tron 2.
Yeah, it was during the Escape from Witch Mountain panel, I guess, which all the press guys...
Oh, I would have tripped over myself to see the Escape from Witch Mountain trailer. Panel. That is full of awesome. That is like so retro.
And it has Dwayne Johnson, so that means I have to see it.
Oh, wait. Tron 2 is going to feature...
No. Escape from Witch Mountain is.
Doing a remake. They're doing a remake of Escape from Witch Mountain?
Essentially, I think they're talking about possibly making a sequel, if I remember right.
Wow. Okay, well, you know what? He's actually been doing pretty well with with the Disney movies.
Yeah. And he has a good charisma.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he was brilliant in Get Smart.
Yes.
He was brilliant in Get Smart.
Yes, he was. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But I'm looking. Well, I'm sorry. I am looking on IMDb.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no mention of Tron, except there's one here that says Tron 2010.
Which is probably what it is. No one even knew this was in production, but it was a full trailer. It was a teaser trailer with Jeff Bridges in it.
That's impressive. Wow. No one knew it was even there.
No, it caught everyone off guard, and apparently he's a bad guy this time around.
Oh. Ooh! Wow. Okay. Now my interest is piqued because last night we heard tell of remakes on remakes, and we also ranted about that. I know Pip and I both the good and the bad. But there was mention that there was going to be a Tron remake, and I was like, we don't need that. But anyway, going back to Comic-Con, the only thing I've been catching is, and this is a beautiful thing about Twitter.
When it's working.
What was that?
When it's working.
When it's working, of course, yeah. Well, the funny thing was, I don't even know how this happened, but I had this, now I remember. Somebody, I got one of the, so-and-so is following you on Twitter, and it was in all caps, separated by underscores, Sarah. And I rolled my eyes and said, oh, great, another spammer. So I click onto it, and the icon for Sarah was the top of a house in bright blue skies.
Okay.
And the only tweet that was there said, let me pull it up because it was just so utterly classic, and I was absolutely blown away by whomever came up with this idea really was thinking, and they knew how to sell an idea. Let me see if I can. I guess it's not in my. It's not in my. So you two talk amongst yourselves, and I'll tell you.
See, I would have thought that you had this tattooed on your arm by now.
That's true, but okay, I think, actually, no, I got it here. So going back to the beginning of Sarah's tweets, so I get this, I get the invite, and I go, okay, great, and I look in, getting ready to block it, and instead it doesn't see it. They took the old one off. It was something along the lines of all my parameters are functioning normal. Sheriff Carter is late again. And I was like, oh my God, this is the house from Eureka. And what they've done at Sci-Fi is that they're actually tweeting, they have this account up, Sarah, all caps, all separated by underscores, including the beginning and the end. And it is the house that tweets at you. And I thought, and I immediately typed in as a reply, oh my God, Sarah is following me. And then I typed in, Eureka, I love this show.
Okay, Sarah, I remember that tweet, yeah.
Yeah, and then Sarah tweeted me back, personalized, and said, safe to say, T-Monster, Eureka loves you too. And I'm
This is the only time I have ever heard T have a crush on a house.
Unbelievable. But they're doing it right. A lot of the majority, now granted, it is pimping Eureka, of course. I mean, I'm looking at the page right now, and it says, counting down to Eureka screening tonight at Comic-Con. Those attending will finally understand what I've been tweeting about all week.
Oh.
Now, that's very cool. But throughout, you see personalized tweets from Sarah to people that are responding to her. And this, in my opinion, is the real marketing potential of Twitter. If all you're doing is just sending out, hey, I'm schlepping this, I'm pimping this, I'm doing this, people are going to tune you out or block you.
Yeah.
But to actually interact with the community, that's awesome. And so I've been actually getting a lot of the Comic-Con news via Sarah, and it makes me wish that I was there. But I've heard so many wacky things about how Comic-Con really isn't a con so much as it's a trade show.
Especially on the movie side.
Sorry?
Especially on the movie side of things.
Exactly. Now, granted, if I could... be, you know, if I could sit in on one of these, if I could take advantage of my podcaster status and interview some of the people that attend Comic-Con, I wouldn't say no to that. That just seems very cool.
Yeah, I we're kind of shooting for it. I know that Billy Flynn's coming out to Denver for Starfest next year, and we're going to do something similar. We're actually going to do a podcasting panel just because they haven't had one yet.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah, if we can get in as press to Comic-Con, first of all, I'll probably crap myself, but we actually have a backup plan where we're going to be able to go next year for sure. So,
Billy Flynn's good people. Definitely.
He is.
So that's cool.
Yes. Cool. I'm trying to think what other news there is. I guess, did you guys hear about the Twilight panel?
No.
We have
but I'm thing. Sure that the I'm sure that the umpteen gazillion podcasts about Twilight have talked about this freaking panel.
Jeez. 16 of them.
Sorry.
Except yes. That they kind of turn, you know, it's a story that's not meant for the geek community. Can I put it that way?
Mm. Oh, dear. What happened?
Well, apparently a bunch of Twilight fans just bought Thursday-only passes for Comic-Con so they could go to the Twilight panel. And many were obnoxious. And then you had the people asking the really dumb questions like, so what's it like to be a hot guy playing a hot vampire guy in a movie?
It's and really hot.
Apparently, now we have a listener, Janet, who's a hardcore Twilight fan. I'm not making fun of the movie itself. It's just the fandom has kind of given it a black eye. Apparently, a lot of the people covering it have just gone on the rampage.
Now, for the people that are fans of Twilight, this is my only thing. You know, I mean, I like to think that I am connected with the fan community, okay? And I've hit a lot of cons since 2002, and I have been hitting the literary panels because that's what I do. I'm a writer, and yet the first time I heard about this book, I mean, even heard about this book, was this year. And I know it's been around for a long time, but all of a sudden there was like, what, 16, like, and it was almost like it was a closing of a door and an opening of another one. The minute Harry Potter, at least the written books of Harry Potter wrapped up, all of a sudden, Twilight, all these podcasts about Twilight started getting produced. And I'm like, what is this book? And then I see the book cover, and it's a woman's hands holding
it. It must be the movie's coming out. There's always a big rush of
interest. I think that's what's triggered it.
That's got to be it. But it wasn't like Harry Potter. I mean, I'd heard of Harry Potter within 2 years of the first book, but it's been something like 4 or 5 years since the first book, and I never heard of this book. And now it just comes out of the blue, and I was like, what is this book? And then I read the description. I'm like, this is a Buffy the Vampire Slayer book. this is the season of Buffy and Angel. And this is what are raving about? I mean, come on.
I guess something's got to fill the vacuum for Harry Potter, I guess.
It is geared toward teenage girls. I know the fandom goes well beyond that, so I understand that. Don't send me emails, please.
I've been a teenage girl. You've got to have something to pass the time until
and like I said, you
get out of teenagehood.
But wow, I mean, I'm like, you know what? 16 podcasts about, you know, look, if I could get two Moravi podcasts or two Billabub Battings fan podcasts, I would be thrilled. But 16, come on, and those are the ones that are listed. There are others that don't make it into the Hot 100 that are just, sorry. We're now you see how we did.
You hit a nerve.
Now, Dave, now you see how we did 3 hours with backseat producers, okay? So anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So the fans descended on the Twilight. I'm curious, how did the stars featured on the Twilight panel handle it?
From what I understand, that there was a lot of look of deer in headlights.
Oh dear!
in the interviews afterwards, from Ain't It Cool and from Slash Film and other places, it was like, yeah, we were really overwhelmed. We weren't expecting this kind of reaction. You know, it's
they were probably sitting there going, "What have we got ourselves into?" Okay.
You know, it's like Menudo. I was like, go ahead, Jeff.
But on the plus side, they've got themselves set for life, you know, to go to cons and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Kind of like Daniel Logan. He was only, you know, baby Boba Fett, but he's going to cons forever now.
Oh, yeah.
Which there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I wish I could do something like that.
I mean, hey, if people are willing to pay your way, you know, more power to you.
Yeah.
But I mean, here's the thing, you know, about, I mean, I've actually been tempted to somehow market this to, you know, stars in Hollywood, basically call it the fanboy primer class or seminar or something like that, because I mean in my background, and I don't know if you saw this in my resume or not, but I have an actor's background, so I know where the actors are coming from. They get on the set, they do their thing, they get a paycheck. It's a gig to them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while I'm an actor, I'm also a fan. And I'm really lucky in that I'm a fan that's worked with actors who have, at least in fandom circles, have made it. And like, I mean, I've written alongside Richard Hatch, very nice guy, and I currently do a traveling workshop with Lonnie Tupu.
Gotcha.
From Farscape. Yes, Lonnie. Yes, Lonnie. so anyway, but the thing is, thank you, Pip. Would you like an Abby Poo? Would you like a lie down? Would you like a coffee? So anyway,
I love the accent.
Yes. he talks funny. So anyway, I have to, when I appear with Lonnie, I sit right next to him and I see the fans that come up to him. And then I saw it with Richard Hatch when I was talking to him about writing with this project I did with Ben Bella Books. And I sat there and I saw the old and the new fans come up to Richard, and I'm watching them. And I'm the only thing I can assume is that Lonnie and Richard knew what to expect because they had been doing it for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
But for the guys from Twilight, I guarantee you they had no. When they said, "Oh, we're going to Comic-Con," that sounds like fun. Or, "Oh, we're going to Comic-Con." Okay, just another promotional. No, it's not. When you do a media con, It's a different universe.
When we talked to Zachary Quinto at Starfest, he couldn't have been a nicer guy. If he was more laid back, he would have been asleep. But you could tell it was kind of hard for him to take everything in.
Now, refresh my memory. Zachary Quinto is who again?
He plays Siler in Heroes, and he's going to be Spock in the new Star Trek.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha. Gotcha, up, gotcha. I know.
Turn in your geek card, sir. No.
Yeah. Sorry,
along
I'm
with
doing
the New
this.
Zealand, I'm doing this little thing. New Zealander, you know, don't you?
Oh, no, I did not know that.
Carl Urban.
Oh, well, and who is that?
He is from Lord of the Rings. Who's the character? He's playing. He's playing. Who is he playing? Ga. I just know he's a New Zealander.
He's playing McCoy. Okay. And in all honesty, I was actually going to bag on the reboot of Trek until I found out that they got Simon Pegg to play Scotty.
Yeah.
And I said, nope, I'm there.
No, I'll ask you the same question that my wife asked me. Are you excited because you think he'll do good? Or are you excited because it's Simon Pegg?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. All I want him to do, I just want to hear Simon Pegg say in his best Scottish brogue, I kind of changed the laws of physics, Jim. You know, I really want him to say that. And considering how it seems like nowadays the people that are doing films are people who are fanboys themselves.
Have you watched Spaced?
Spaced?
Yeah.
No, I have not seen Spaced. I have not seen Spaced yet.
Oh.
That's the downside of being a writer. A lot of times I don't have time to catch all the stuff I want to catch, but Spaced I've heard a lot of stuff about. What were you going to go?
Well, it is you want to talk about geek fanboys? Oh dear God. It just released in the US on, I think, this past Tuesday. So you're not that far behind the curve at all.
Oh, okay.
I just imported my copy a while back, so that's why I've been preaching it for years.
Gotcha.
But this is the geekiest show of all time. But yeah, I agree wholeheartedly.
Didn't they do a version of the Lord of the Rings fans? I'm sure I've seen that one. It wasn't called Space. Something else.
Okay.
That was quite fun to watch as well.
I think Futurama's doing a spoof on it for their next movie.
Well, I remember the comedy team of French and Saunders did Fellowship of the Ring in they did the Fellowship of the Ring in 30 minutes. And they played all the characters. Dawn French, and if your listeners don't know who Dawn French is, she is the one of two people that did French and Saunders, but she's more famous for The Vicar of Dibley. She's the vicar.
Okay.
And she was Frodo. And let's see, and Jennifer Saunders, that people should know from Absolutely Fabulous, Jennifer Saunders played most of the other parts. And it was really funny because they not only poked fun at the big scene between Galadriel and Frodo, they poked a little fun at Kate Blanchett because at one point Jennifer Saunders comes down and she's talking to Frodo and she's barely moving her lips because Kate Blanchett barely moves her lips in that scene. You notice it. And mm-hmm. I didn't really catch that until I watched this spoof and I'm like, I'm howling. And Dawn French's Frodo is looking at, and she starts mimicking Galadriel. So now we got two actresses that are mimicking a character they're both mimicking Kate Blanchett. And I was just dying. This is really, and then for the big battle scenes, they did these obvious shots where they took little toy soldiers, little like plastic toy soldier men. Okay. And they were like they were like, you know, tipping the set to make them charge one another. It was really funny. It was really well done.
Okay, I'm going to have to
What other geeky goodness is happening at Comic-Con?
Oh, good Lord. That's all that I've heard about so far. I know there's like a crap ton more. The other news that came out, I guess we'll end with this and then we can go into a break. Kevin Smith's newest movie, Zack and Mary Make a Porno, you haven't heard that title, huh?
God bless Steve. I love that guy.
His film's been to the MPAA, I think, three times, and after he's edited it, made three different edits, and it's still getting an NC-17.
He needs to do what the guys from South Park did. Everything he takes out that's sex, he just throws in the word, he just throws in the F-bomb, and I guarantee you, in fact, if you ever heard Trey Parker and Matt Stone talk about it, it's a very funny story. They would take out a scene of violence. That's apparently what was the problem. Or was it the other way around? I'm trying to remember if it was. I think what it was they were saying the F bomb too much.
Okay.
So they took out. Yeah, that's what happened. They took out the F. So they took out one F bomb, but for every one F bomb, they threw in a really gratuitous, gory death.
Okay.
And they sent it to the folks at the movie board. And they looked at it, and they'd send it back, and they go, It's still NC-17, but you're closer. So
it's really must be hard to make a movie where the title's got porno in it, you know.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I think there's definitely a double standard there, because, I mean, okay, I enjoyed Dark Knight very much, but I still maintain the PG-13 rating was a joke.
That was PG-13?
That was PG-13.
And that was on the cusp of PG-13. That was on the cusp. That was on the cusp of PG-13. Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
it all depends on who you have behind you.
That's true. And you know what? And honestly, I think the rating system should not be as stringently looked at, I guess we should say, because quite honestly, parents are idiots. and I say this is after I'm pretty sure this was after. When did the Passion of the Christ come out?
I think it was 2 years ago.
2 years ago?
I think so. 2 or 3 years ago.
Okay. So if it was 2 or 3, okay. So this was after my child Sonic Boom was born. So after Sonic Boom was born, got a sitter and went to go see the Passion of the Christ. Some idiot brought his entire family to see this movie. Mm-hmm. A newborn, a 3-year-old, and a 5-year-old. The movie was intense enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
And yet this guy turned it into a Disney family outing. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. You've got to be freaking kidding me. And of course I can hear the argument, well, it is the story of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. I went, yeah, it's about his crucifixion.
It's not about the rest of the life or anything. It's, yeah.
No, it's not about the happy parts. And I was a little taken aback. And the thing is, somebody said, yeah, you know, even with the rating that they gave it, I felt bad for the person selling the tickets, because it's like, I really shouldn't be letting these kids in, but the parents are buying the tickets.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, parents are idiots. Parents are idiots.
I think people are just idiots, and parents are just a subset of people. So being a parent doesn't automatically make your intelligence quotient go up.
Exactly.
And but okay.
So anyway, wow. So
as
I
was just thinking about when you were saying parents are idiots. The New Zealand, they just had the story about somebody naming their child Tallulah Does the Hula from Hawaii, and and a judge made her a ward of the court so that she could change her name. Poor child.
Wow.
Yeah.
So if you're going to name your kid that, you should just go on ahead and have tattooed on the kid's forehead, beat me up on a daily basis. You know, just and,
please. And put,
you know, please. Yeah, please.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Wow. Okay. Well, I think that's a good note to take a quick break. So, yeah, we'll be right back after this.
Sue Ellen Greenblatt is a real person, not an internet celebrity. So we've enlisted Billy Flynn and the Vicar to help her tell her story.
Geek Radio Daily gives me geeky news about movies, new DVD releases, even comics and gaming.
Geek Radio Daily makes me feel special.
Ah, yeah.
Womanly.
Yeah.
Okay, so the episodes are just 15 minutes, perfect for my commute or for just geeking out while I'm at the office.
Mm. All in one concise love package.
Ooh, the package, baby.
Uh-huh. And the best part is that it's a daily cast, so I'm always in the loop.
Sometimes I listen to it out of the bath, put on little outfits.
Ah!
It makes me want to invite all my friends over to show how refreshed I feel.
Mm, a slumber party, baby.
What? That's not what I said.
Get out the
chocolate mousse.
Duct tape.
Oh, get out of here, you freaks.
Geek Radio Daily. One 15-minute podcast provides 15% of the USDA recommended daily allowance of geeky goodness. Subscribe through iTunes or visit geekradiodaily.com.
All right, welcome back. I guess I should go into how this kind of came about in the first place. T got to go see Indiana Jones 4, which everyone knows is my favorite movie of the summer, and we kind of agreed about how bad
yes,
it was.
Yes. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal suck, as I like to call it.
I actually have not heard that yet, so bravo, sir.
Well, actually, the one that I heard that was, in my opinion, one of the more fun moments. I heard that people are now, instead of saying that jumped the shark, people are now saying that nuked the fridge.
Yes.
And yet the nuking of the fridge scene actually was, for me, a true Indiana Jones movie moment. I bought that. A weird part of me said, yeah, that was fun. but here's where things, and I thought, at that moment, I thought, okay, the movie's turning around. Because here's what happened. So we have the opening of the movie. Everything's fine. Everything's cool. I'm like, all right. But when Kate Blanchett tried to read Harrison Ford's mind, I thought to myself, we're not even 10 minutes into the movie, and I'm worried.
Well, was it that or was it the Moose and Squirrel accent?
I could even let go of the Moose and Squirrel accent, because here's the thing. Right before we saw Indiana Jones, right before I went to go see Kingdom of the Crystal Suck, I pulled out Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I was reminded how good that movie is. Just absolutely how good this movie is. And
maybe you shouldn't have watched it first.
Maybe I shouldn't have watched it. You're probably right. Maybe I shouldn't have watched it. But I mean, like, the little things, like, you know, the actor playing Belloc, who's a wonderful British actor. He's British. Mm-hmm. And he has this outrageous French accent. You know, I really wanted them to say, you know, when he's looking down at Indiana Jones, I really wanted him to say, "Hello, you silly archaeologist person. You know, I frighten your general director."
Yes.
I mean, it was a pretty outrageous French accent, but we went with it. And there are other British actors in there who have, you know, pretty over-the-top German accents. So I was willing to give Kate Blanchett Moose and Squirrel, you know? Because also, she's Kate Blanchett. She's hot, even as a brunette. So I was willing to go on a pass on that. But then they find the artifact that they're looking for. And when I saw the sticker that read Roswell, New Mexico, I flinched. I flinched.
The plane started to turn down and you hear the scream. The wings on fire.
I said, yep, I'm hurting. This is going to be bad. And then even when they nuked the fridge, I thought, okay, maybe it's turning around. Maybe this was sort of like a false story within the story or something. And that's what I was really hoping for. And then we had the Men in Black, and they were talking about. And of course, the first question that pops in my head is, okay, Harrison Ford is an archaeologist. Why the hell is he being asked to look at a UFO wreckage? Scientist?
Yes. That's because it's got Indiana Jones in the title of the movie.
Right.
And at least one of the Men in Black was the janitor from Scrubs.
Well, I see. Okay. Yeah, I missed that. I missed that entirely. So I'm like, all right. And I'm trying to run with this. And then Shia LaBeouf shows up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wanted to like him. I really wanted to like him. I mean, I was even willing to... I gave him a pass in Transformers. I mean, that was just a... You know, first off, people were like, oh, what a suck movie. I mean, come on, it was based off of a toy. It wasn't even based off of a story. It's based off of a toy. And they made it work. They made it work for what it was. You know, but it wasn't an Indiana Jones movie. And Shia LaBeouf, I was just like, what? Oh man, and then we had a glimmer of hope again when they had the fight, in the malt shop.
Mm-hmm.
But even in the malt shop, there was a problem. First off, let's go back to Raiders. In Raiders, we had to have exposition. We had to bring people up to speed on what was the Lost Ark of the Covenant. And we have this wonderful, you know, Harrison Ford drawing, you know, illustrations of what the Staff of Ra is and how it works. And then the guy goes, well, you know, what is a Lost Ark? And he goes, and then they open up that big Bible and you see the picture and you see this dramatic picture of what the Ark is doing. And you hear that beautiful music from John Williams. And, when they go, good God, and yes, that's just what the Hebrews thought. I mean, all these wonderful things happening because you get character insight while it's happening. They go, well, what's this coming out? And in a blow-off line, Harrison Ford says lightning, fire, power of God or something. And you have an obvious idea in that one line what Indiana Jones' thoughts are concerning faith and miracles and religion in general.
Yeah.
Just from the one line. So what was the big exposition scene, the big dramatic exposition scene in Indiana Jones and Kingdom of the Crystal Suck? It's Shia LaBeouf and Indiana and Harrison Ford talking. Talking. And the most dramatic thing is they look at a letter. And he keeps saying, yeah, my mother's name is Marion. Oh, like that didn't trigger a bell? My mother, Marion, said I should seek you out.
Or the name Mutt, which I didn't catch until someone pointed that out to me.
Named after the dog.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Come on. And then after the library scene, you know, it just spiraled out of control. And the moment I saw Shia LaBeouf swinging through the trees with the spider monkey, I just said, check, please. I'm done. And I should have gotten up and left. I should have. But I said, I'm going to see this to the bitter end. I want to see how far they go. And while it didn't happen in my movie theater, I heard that in some movie theaters, people actually booed when the hat flew up. Yeah, when they booed, when it flew up to Shia LaBeouf, and he got it. He got the hat. And I said, if that goes on his goddamn head, I'm gonna go out to freaking LA, stalk Steven Spielberg, and when the moment comes up, no matter how many bodyguards he's got around him, I'm gonna kick him square in the jimmies. Because
You didn't like it, did you?
No. I would rather sit through Battlefield Earth than Indiana Jones Kingdom of the Crystal Suck.
That's a big call.
Yeah.
I would rather sit through a double feature of Battlefield Earth and Blade Trinity than watch Kingdom of the Crystal Suck.
Now here's a real question. Would you rather watch The Happening?
The reason why I wrote off The Happening, Steven Spielberg does know how to make a good movie.
You mean
Shyamalan? What?
You mean Shyamalan?
No, you missed the point.
Okay.
The difference between Kingdom of the Crystal Suck and The Happening, I wrote off The Happening because Steven Spielberg, I know, can make a good movie.
Gotcha.
I have yet to watch an M. Night Shyamalan film and go, woo. I mean, even back to the big one, you know, The Sixth Sense. I kept staring at Bruce Willis. Spoiler alert for those of you who haven't seen The Sixth Sense or even know about this or live under a rock for a few years. And I just looked at him and kept looking at him and I said, he's dead. And I remember turning to my wife and saying, he's dead. And she looked at me and she goes, you just figured that out? And I was like, oh, F you. You know what I mean? I'm blonde. What do you want from me? But I did figure it out. I mean, it wasn't really that hard or surprising to figure out, you know? Now I have heard, though, that Unbreakable is supposed to be really, really good.
It's my personal favorite, but you're either going to love it or hate it. There is no middle ground, like with most of his movies.
Right. Well, yeah. But, yeah. I mean, I had no desire to see The Happening. Tried to watch Signs. Checked out on that really quick. Kingdom of the Crystal Suck. You know, and people were saying, well, you had your hopes up really high. And I'm like, well, you know what? My hopes were higher for The Dark Knight. And the minute, it opened strong. I mean, they came out of the box swinging.
Oh, yeah.
But I knew this was going to be an extremely hellacious ride when Heath Ledger, the Joker, actually, I even shouldn't say Heath Ledger, when the Joker did the pencil trick.
The magic trick.
Ta-da! I mean, whoa. And there was laughter in the audience, but it was like you didn't want to laugh, but it was brilliant.
There's a lot of nervous laughter in that movie.
There was a very there was this palpable tension whenever the Joker came on, not because, ooh, it's Heath Ledger, ooh, he's dead, ooh, what tragedy. It was tension as in, this Joker scares the pee out of me.
Yeah.
And that was an absolute tour de force. I mean, and I hate using that cliche, but it was. Heath Ledger was absolutely stunning as the Joker. And the other one that I think is getting a little bit of who's being overshadowed by it, but he shouldn't, because he turned in just as impeccable. Well, Pip has said this. Everybody brought their A game.
Yeah, yeah. I personally liked Aaron Eckhart even a little bit better.
I was just about to say, Aaron Eckhart. Wow, he was my Two Face.
Yeah.
First off, the other half of the face wasn't purple. Thank you. You know, what was the smartest thing that happened in the Batman franchise? Joel Schumacher was told, you will never make another Batman movie again.
Yeah.
The second smart thing, they took the nipples off the Batsuit, even though I'm sure Pip wouldn't mind nipples on Christian Bale's Batsuit. But, you know, that's just my opinion. Still with us, Pip?
Sorry, you said yep. Christian Bale and nipples. I was just...
Yeah.
The much-needed female element. Yes, we don't get that on here too often. So,
yeah.
It's all good.
But my hopes were just that high for The Dark Knight, and it surpassed it.
Yeah.
And like I said, Spielberg knows how to make a good movie. At least once upon a time, he did. And you know, I didn't like Minority Report as much as everybody else, as much as everyone raved about it. I was like, War of the Worlds barely held my attention. And after this, I'm like, you know, I don't know if I trust Spielberg anymore. I just, you know.
It's iffy,
I don't
trust
know.
Trust is a hard thing to earn back.
Very true. Very true.
I was actually going to see The Clone Wars before I saw Indiana Jones. I'm like, oh, no, it's written by Lucas. No, he's never getting another dime of my money ever again.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. This was my last shot for Lucas. I said, okay, this is where Lucas either redeems himself or I'm not giving him another cent of my money. And I was so disappointed. And then for them to come out and say, we've been developing the script for years. And this, you know, out of all the scripts we reviewed and all the scripts you've developed, this is the best one we had. I'm like, that's BS. You walked out of IndieCon 2 and you said, wow, we need to write a script. So you locked yourselves in a room with a six pack and a blank piece of paper and you wrote out this script. And for me, the big bottom line, you don't send Indiana Jones after UFOs. You send him after Atlantis. You send him after the lost treasure of Blackbeard. You send him after the jockstrap of Antioch, but you do not send him after UFOs.
Okay, I need to send you the voicemail we got from one of our listeners, Marty, because he did an actual skit of Lucas and Spielberg, but they were Bert and Ernie from Sesame Street. Yeah, I'll email you that link because it's good. Well, okay, so one thing that we like to talk about whenever we have a guest on, especially who's not someone who's you know really all that involved with the movie community or whatever necessarily, what do you think about the current movie going experience? Is that a loaded question?
Wow, what do you think of the current... when you say the current movie-going experience, you're talking about the whole experience, as in, like, walking into the theater, yada, yada, yada?
Walking into the theater, the quality of the movies, everything. Because this is kind of an ongoing discussion that we have about what's going better, what's going worse. Are theaters on the way out?
We've got really nice theaters here now. So, in fact, we're getting all those... little theaters where you come in and you're like on a couch and it's just, you know, I don't know, 30 or 40 people in a little, do you get those? Or you're the big multiplexes?
Gotcha.
Because they're sort of cropping up in little suburbs and stuff.
Okay. Because, I mean, on one hand, you have movies that really are like a theatrical experience. You need to experience them in the theater, like Dark Knight, like Iron Man, like Wall-E, you know, films like that. And then you got all the crap that comes out, too.
I save the... I save that for DVD at home.
And that's what a lot of people do.
Yeah. I mean, things like The Dark Knight, you want to see it on the huge screen and go and have the whole experience. But what was the one? The Guantanamo Bay one? Yeah.
But again, sometimes you want to see a movie like that with a bunch of people. A movie like that is good to laugh with a lot of people. At the same time, do you want to deal with the idiots on cell phones, the kids kicking your chair, the parents who bring their kid who coughs through the entire movie and doesn't give them any cough drops or take them out or anything, things like that?
No. Rather stay at home. But the movies?
Well, it sounds like you've kind of got better theaters out there than I've got around here. So,
I know.
Well, that's because Peter Jackson put a lot of money into a certain theater called the Embassy.
There is that.
So, okay, I have to ask Pip this just because. So is Peter Jackson pretty much considered a national treasure?
Yes. I'm in the same, well, we're in the same town, you see, you know.
Oh, okay.
So when I see him on the street.
Yeah.
But I did go to all the premieres here in Wellington, and I did see him there.
Very cool.
He waved to me.
There you go.
Yeah, hey. You and 2,000 other people, Pip. I
had
to break.
No, we had eye contact. We had a little, he was like, in a couple of years, I'm getting a script off you. And I was like, yeah, I've got a book for you, Peter. He's Saint Peter of the Balrog.
Nice. Hey, I've been a fan of the man's work since, I guess it's Dead Alive over there, but it's Brain Dead over in New Zealand, right?
Brain Dead. Yes. Yes,
since the good stuff.
He's a national icon. He's doing Lovely Bones and Avatar, and he's built himself a nice, huge soundstage area over in Miramar that is attracting Spielberg and
nice.
A few other people. He's making some friends. But yeah, and because he didn't leave and go to Hollywood, everyone's like, oh, Peter. I love you, Peter. Everyone, you know, having actors, having Sigourney Weaver wandering around town and stuff.
Very cool.
But New Zealanders are very laid back. They're not like going to run over and say, can you sign this? Can you sign this? It's like, oh yeah, there's Sigourney Weaver. Hi, Sigourney. Yeah.
Very nice. Well, I can't let you go without letting you guys pimp your stuff a little bit. Because
I'd like to go back and talk a little bit about this, because this now you got me thinking.
Okay, about the theatrical experience.
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, I think that we get a lot of the theaters that are popping up here are the metro, are, you know, the multiplexes.
Mm-hmm.
But the multiplexes that are popping up all have stadium seating, which I really wish I had when I was a kid, way back when I went to a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Thing that really irks me about the movie experience is you see one, you see two, you see three reminders of people that say, please silence your cell phones. And idiots still don't do it. And you know, this goes back to, you know, to me, this just goes back to you know, technology etiquette. And I really believe, in my perfect world, one, everybody be using a Mac. And two, when you buy a cell phone, you are obligated by law to take a class on, this is a cell phone. This is when you use it. This is when you don't use it. This is when you have it on silence. This is when you don't. And really, the people that take their cell phones and actually talk on cell phones while they're on treadmills and when they're exercising, yeah, those people are idiots. Those people are – no, actually, I take that back. They are idiots. They're just plain idiots. The people that leave them on in church and in movie theaters, yeah, they're assholes because they think, I am so important, I can't miss this call if it comes in. My opinion is, if you are that important, you shouldn't be at the movies. You should be sitting at home waiting for this all-important phone call from Peter Jackson saying, yeah, Pip, get me a script. Now, Pip is smart, though. She would never, you would never have your cell phone on in a theater, right,
oh,
Pip?
Oh, no.
Exactly.
No.
But, I mean, I've had, not just at the movie theater, but in live theater as well.
Oh, really?
Oh, I was on stage in the middle of a monologue. Cell phone I heard went off once, twice, three times, and I'm still going through my monologue, and I thought to myself, if I hear the fifth ring, I'm going to stop. I'm going to stop and wait until the guy either leaves or he's done. But I've had people take calls and then start talking. And this happened right next to us during Batman, during The Dark Knight.
And they don't even try to be quiet.
And not only did they take the call, not only did the phone go off, they took the call, and they're talking. Yeah, I'm in the middle of the movie. Yeah. Oh yeah, it's almost done. Yeah. Okay, I'll talk to you later. Bye. I was like.
And that couldn't wait for the 20 minutes.
That couldn't wait. No, couldn't wait. Could not wait. And I mean, I am appalled at people who do not have proper phone etiquette. I'm appalled at people who do not have proper tech etiquette. You know, the reason why when you get a cell phone, you automatically get voicemail added on is so that you're not the dumb yucca putz that is ruining my movie experience. Now, yeah. outside of the assholes, I am still willing to deal with that. I'm still willing to deal with it because as great of a theater system as you can have at home and as terrific of a man cave as one can create for themselves, at the same time, nothing beats actually physically being in a movie theater for me. Nothing beats that experience with the popcorn and the cookie dough bites and the soda and just kicking back and really enjoying a film. Jeff is for you. In fact, this annoys the hell out of my wife. I do this and you know, it's a sore spot with me. It's a major sore spot with me. I want to get to the movies 15 minutes before it starts.
Okay.
15 minutes. Two reasons. One, and I wish that these were around when I was a kid. They do this thing called first look. Mm-hmm. Every 15 or 20 minutes before the film. These are at Regal Cinemas. And they tend to be behind the scenes looks and upcoming things that are happening on the television, stuff like that. I love that. I love that. And then sometimes they'll throw in like a mini trailer. Sometimes they'll throw in a trailer for something coming on television. I love that. But the reason why it's got to be before the movie starts.
Yes.
I want to see the trailers.
Yes.
I want to see the trailers.
Come on, done, the Watchmen trailer.
Ha. Oh.
Yes.
Ha. Oh. That was celluloid sex right there. I mean, but you know, I got to admit, as excited as I am, I'm wondering how well the, I mean, I'm so jazzed to see Rorschach. But the thing is, I just recently went back and reread The Watchmen.
Mm-hmm.
Around the same time that I reread V for Vendetta. And between the two, I think V for Vendetta holds up. Watchmen is a little dated.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little dated for, and I wonder how well the material is going to hold up. But I'm willing to give it a shot. I'm excited to see The Comedian. I'm excited to see Doc Manhattan. I'm excited to see Night Owl. You know, I think it's visual, and also it's done by the guy who did 300.
Yeah.
So again, there's another slam dunk for you.
Sorry, I didn't mean to make a tangent again on you.
No, you're good. But I mean, I want to be there for the trailers. I really want to be there for the trailers. You know, for Dark Knight, for any film I see, because I want to know what's coming around the bend. At one, when I saw the first preview for Eagle Eye, I got very excited. Then I saw Kingdom of the Crystal suck. Not so excited. But I did see it. A trailer for the new 007 movie.
Yes, Quantum of Solace.
And I want to see that. I really. And what I like about it, I think this is sort of Dan Craig saying, no, I'm not Connery, I'm not Moore, and I'm not Brosnan. When he comes up over the ridge, and instead of just doing the real stylish Walther PPK, he's got this massive cannon on his arm. I'm like, oh baby, rock on. You know, I mean, nice way to sort of, you know, claim the role for yourself. But I really do think that the trailers are also part of the movie experience. I agree with Pip though. There are some movies that, you know, like Harold and Kumar Go to Guantanamo Bay, yeah, that might be best as a rental.
Yeah.
There are some that I regret missing on the big screen. I did not see... I did see that on the big screen. I'm sorry. What was my... Oh, I didn't see Die Hard with... Live Free or Die Hard on the big screen.
Oh.
And I'm sorry I didn't, because... And even with... Okay, now, this is where people say, well, standards in movies are too high. I got news for you. There are no tunnels in Washington, D.C. None. But you know what? I didn't care. Why?
No.
Bruce Willis as John McClane. I was happy. Especially when he's talking to himself. Because in every John McClane movie, he's got to just go, but no, you got to do this. You got to do this. I mean, I love it when he starts talking to himself. I mean, that's a John McClane tick.
Yeah.
And, I love the overall theater experience. I really do, whether it's live theater or theater in the box office. And yeah, I mean, there are movies that I see on the big screen that I'm glad I saw on the big screen, and I think it's a real testament when you watch them on your home theater or even on your laptop, and they still hold up.
Most definitely.
That's saying a lot. And then, of course, there's the IMAX experience, and I'm excited about this because Pip has been too quiet for long. Pip's going to be in the States.
Ooh.
And she's going to be in the States very soon. And as a treat, I am taking Pip to go see The Dark Knight on IMAX.
Oh, that's how I'm going to see it next. I've decided I'm going to see it again, and I have to see the IMAX version.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see it originally on IMAX, or have you not seen it that way yet?
I've not seen it that way. I've not seen it.
But you know that they've filmed six sequences with IMAX cameras, right?
Yes, and I'm looking forward to seeing that experience. Yes.
Seeing the bank heist in IMAX is beautiful.
Oh. I'm actually more looking forward to the tumbler to Batpod scene.
Yeah.
That's going to be awesome. That's going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Right, somebody wake up. Somebody wake up Pip. She's being far too quiet over there.
I'm just contemplating IMAX.
And drooling.
Christian Bale on Christian Bale on IMAX. Is that what you're thinking, Pip?
That's right, yep.
Very nice. Let's talk about what you guys are, we've briefly mentioned Double Trouble. You've both got books come out. I'd like Pip to go first. Tell us about Digital Magic and Chasing the Bard, actually, too, for people who may not be familiar with it.
Chasing the Bard is Shakespeare in his own Midsummer Nightmare, manipulated by dark, mysterious fae creatures. And so it's set in the Renaissance England and in the fairy realm. And then Digital Magic, which is the sequel, is set in the near future. So it's a bit like cyber fae. Is that a genre? Cyberpunk fae.
It is now.
It's also partly set in New Zealand, so it's going to be interesting to see how people...
So your new title is now genre-breaking, Pip Ballantyne.
That's right. I just take genres and mush them together.
As opposed to ball-breaking Pip Ballantyne. Yes.
That's right. I'm trying to avoid that one.
Nice. And then T, you've got several things in the fire, so I'll let you just talk about whatever you would like.
Actually, the one I'm focusing on right now is The Case of the Pitcher's Pendant, A Billabub Batting's Mystery. This is a sequel in the same vein as Digital Magic. This is also a sequel. So again, Double Trouble. These are both the second books in I don't know if Pip, are you planning a follow-up to Digital Magic, or have you not decided?
There is room for one.
If there's another. So I guess if we do this again, if we don't kill each other after this,
we're gonna be triple trouble.
No, I was thinking of the Troublesome Trio, and then we talk about the third books in our series. But no, this is the second case from the Billabub Batting's Mysteries. The first one was called The Case of the Singing Sword. And that one was released in print in 2004 and then released as a podcast in 2007. And I had a blast putting together the podcast of The Case of the Singing Sword. So The Case of the Pitcher's Pendant is a year later, and the bubble has burst. So they're in the middle of the Depression, or I should say at the beginning of the Depression.
Okay.
And Billy's, he's serving two masters, as it were. He's trying to keep the private eye business afloat, but by keeping it afloat, he's got to go back and do the Waldorf the Magic Munchkin routines. and so as you can tell, this is a mystery, but it's a fantasy. It's a comedy. I mean,
I was going to ask you, can you just really quick give us a quick Billy, just for people who don't know.
What, you don't know who Billy is? No, you don't. Okay.
You should, but you know.
Thank you, sir. Billy is a dwarf. He's a dwarf from an alternate realm called Acrianus. And he went on the very typical D&D style campaign. Black orcs were taking these 9 talismans, and they were opening up this portal of oblivion and calling to the dark forces that resided within it. Well, on this campaign, Billy decides the best way to close the portal is to take the talismans and throw them into the portal and make the talisman close in on itself. Great idea, but the only problem was is that he was too close to the portal and he got sucked through it. When he came to, instead of being in oblivion, he found himself in 1929 Chicago, or actually 1928 Chicago. And he actually found himself specifically in the basement of a public library. So what he did was, he said, all right, here we go. I'm going to start working my way through here and just try to figure out what this world is all about. Teaches himself how to read. He starts going through the books, not all the books, but he just goes through a few of the books. And of all the books he discovers, the thing that stood out the most was Private Investigations. He loved the mysteries of Agatha Christie, loved the mysteries of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and he said, you know what? That's what I want to do. So he decides to become a private investigator. And and in the case of the pitcher's pendant, what happens is that the manager of the Chicago Cubs is in his office. And this is a treat for Billy because Billy is a huge baseball fan. And the manager wants to hire Billy to investigate the Baltimore Mariners. They're a brand new team out of Baltimore. And they're playing baseball, but they're playing baseball almost too well. So Billy has to look into it. And that's where the mystery unfolds.
Nice.
And I had a terrific time doing this. I mean, while I'm not a fan, it's like this. I'm not a fan of baseball, but I'm a fan of the baseball mythology.
Gotcha.
Movies like, to turn it back to movies, Field of Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to, you know, what is baseball, that to me is Field of Dreams. I have watched that movie. I saw it on the big screen. It holds up on the small screen. I just love that movie. I really love that movie. And I'll give a quick Field of Dreams story. I was studying in England. Well, no, I'm sorry. It wasn't a Field of Dreams. But it was a baseball kind of moment. Remember the show The Wonder Years?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There was a scene that involved baseball or something like that, like something in a ballpark, and the character is talking to the dad. And my dad is a lot like his dad in Wonder Years. And it was the last episode of Wonder Years they were showing over there. And I was watching it, and I suddenly got really homesick. So I call my folks. It's something like it's something like 11 or 12 o'clock at night. And I call my folks, and I'm like, Mom, is Dad there? And and she's like, yeah. And Dad's like, son, what's wrong? What's wrong? It's like, oh, I was just watching The Wonder Years. I started to miss you. I just want to say I love you, Dad. And Dad's like, T, hang up and go to sleep. You know. I mean, it was a goofy moment, but because it was happening, I think it was because it was happening, the scene itself was happening at a ballpark, and the character was talking about baseball. It just, all of a sudden, I just started to flip out, because the other thing, too, is that my dad is he's a retired umpire.
Oh, okay.
So I look at the sport in an entirely different way than a lot of people do. But my dad is also a fan, is a really big fan of baseball. And the pitcher's pendant was just a gas to write. It was a gas to write. And while I said, while I'm not a fan of the sport, I am a fan of the magic that the sport creates.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. Now, okay, you mentioned making podcasts out of them. They're known as patio books or podcast novels.
Right.
Something that's, I think, is worth asking, and some people may not be familiar with the concept. How is it different from a regular podcast? Or is
well,
it?
Well,
I like to tell people it's more like radio theater.
It depends on how you do it. I mean, Pip and I, one thing Pip and I share in common with our respective patio books is that we've incorporated guest voices. And we're not the only patio book authors to do this. Chris Lester of Metamore City had done this, and Pip and I both contribute voices to his podcast. There is Murder at Avedon Hill with P.G. Holyfield.
Yep.
And again, Pip and I do voices for him as well. But there are some authors that do just straight reads. People like J.C. Hutchins and Scott Sigler. And Matthew Wayne Selznick is another one who does straight reads. Mer Lafferty, straight reads. And it was only recently that Scott Sigler has started to really get into the production elements. I think I've been a bad influence on Pip. because her podcast is nothing short of brilliant, and a lot of it is that she's really putting her heart into it. I mean, the care and the touches of production that Pip adds to it, to the podcast. But what really makes a audiobook different, not necessarily from a podcast, from an audiobook. With an audiobook, you get the whole thing. You buy it, you get the whole thing, you read it, you know, you listen to it, and it's everything's there in one massive file or one massive download or several files or something like that. But with a podcast, novel or a audiobook, you get one chapter at a time once a week is the
generally first, speaking.
Generally speaking. Yeah. But anyway, you've got that, and you get it one chapter at a time, and you don't pay a thing for it. We ask for donations, but you know, you do that. So there's that. You know, you're getting the book for free, but you're getting it one chapter at a time. And also, and I give Scott Sigler credit for this. There's some podcast novelists that do just the book, but what makes a podcast novel different from from other podcast novels is how do you do it? I have Moravi Matters. When it was Billy Banter. And we do little get to know the author segments at the beginning and at the end of the chapter, so the chapter almost becomes a segment in the podcast show.
Gotcha. And I finished the first Billy. I've listened to the entirety of Billy and the Singing Sword, and it was really good, and I dug the living crap out of it, and everyone needs to listen to it. And I've also started listening to Chasing the Bard, and I've really been getting sucked into that as well. So do you find that as people listen to these, they end up getting the books more often, end up picking up the books?
Now I was about to say that's definitely a question for Pip, because Pip has a very unique position concerning her book and the podcast. And as Pip answers that question, I'm going to quickly pull up Chasing the Bard on Amazon.com.
I have an interesting position on my book. Yes, I want people to buy my book. That's a really weird position for a writer to take. I have noticed that since I started podcasting that the book is going in Amazon. It's available, then it's not available, and it's available, it's not available. So I presume that somebody's buying it, which is nice because it's been out since 2005. So it's nice to have a refresher, I think. And I'm just enjoying doing it, enjoying the interaction with people and stuff. What are you doing, T?
Well, what I'm doing is pulling up your page on Amazon.com, because before Pip, now see, here's the challenge that Pip is really underplaying. Pip is not, as you can hear in her voice, Pip ain't from these parts. Exactly. We're the ones with the funny voices, right, Pip?
Precisely.
Exactly. But anyway, so Pip is in Wellington, New Zealand, and because she lives in Wellington, New Zealand, it's really hard for her to get out and promote the book. And when Chasing the Bard was originally published in 2005, it was really ranked very low in the Amazon charts. I mean, it was ranked, in the 2 millions and stuff like that. You know, people just didn't know it was there. And since she started podcasting it, her rankings have been seesawing back and forth. As Pip said, it's available, it's not available. It's available, it's not available. It's available, it's not available. And what is a three-year-old book, and a lot of people say that a shelf life for a new novel is roughly 2 to 3 years, I really believe that podcasting has given Pip the ability to market her book all the way from Wellington, New Zealand. And
her sales... one less stock.
Exactly. Okay. See, and that's what I mean. Is that her rankings have shot into the upper 100,000s? They float, but she is not. But since podcasting, she has not been. At least I've never seen her sink back down into the 2 millions. And that says a lot. That says that she's moving books. And the thing is, I read the book back then, and I loved it. And I told as many people as I could about it. But I think what Pip is doing with the podcast has completely opened up and just had a blast doing it, and I think it's really introducing Pip and her work to new people. So I'm excited about August 8th, 2008. I'm excited for Pip as well. We should probably talk a little bit about what we're planning on 08-08, because I realized we just got everybody up to speed on our books.
Yes.
But not necessarily on what we're doing on August 8th, 2008.
Well, please do inform us.
Yeah. By the way, late breaking news. Kevin Smith, according to Sarah, Kevin Smith was very entertaining as the BSG panel moderator. Wow. Kevin Smith is on the panel for BSG. That should rock. And they apparently had just started the Eureka panel, so good for them. Okay, so anyway, so August 8th, 2008. What we're doing is we're doing something very different from any other podcasting authors that people have done in the past. Scott Sigler started this on April 1st, 2007, when he released Ancestor. He basically told all of his listeners, I got this book coming out from Dragon Moon Press called Ancestor. Wait until April 1st. In fact, wait until April 1st at this particular date and at this particular time, and I want you all to hit Amazon and hit it hard. So Scott did that with Ancestor, and he got Ancestor into the top 10 overall rankings on Amazon.com.
Wow.
Not too bad for a small press book.
Yeah.
Year later, right before Scott Sigler was to make this push with Infected, Seth Harwood stepped up and did the same thing with his crime novel, Jack Wakes Up. And he did it on Palms Sunday, because the head character is Jack Palms.
Okay.
And I realized, okay, I've got to do something like this. So I was trying to be clever. I was trying to be, trying to give a date where everybody would remember it. And I thought, oh, hey, wait a minute. August 8th, 2008. Yeah, yeah. Well, I found out two things are happening on August 8th, 2008, along with Double Trouble. One of them is the Olympics. But I know that you're either an Olympic, if you're listening to podcasts, there's a good possibility you're not a big fan of the Olympics.
Fair enough.
I don't mean to paint with a broad brush there, but I don't know. I just,
You look at the demographic and it doesn't fit.
Yeah, I guess so.
Painting yourself into a corner, see. You can read books and watch the Olympics.
Yeah, because, but the Olympics is a commitment that I'm not ready to make, and, and I also got a little sour because every time I tuned, I love the Winter Olympics, but every time I tuned in for these last Winter Olympics, all I saw was curling.
Oh.
All I saw was curling. And I'm like, what about the skiing? What about the bobsled? What about the figure skates? Come on. You're killing me. But anyway. So, what was that?
Nothing. You just wanted to see the girls in the little outfits.
Well, that. No, Pip. That is the volleyball. That's what I'm looking at.
The beach volleyball?
The beach volleyball.
Okay.
Abs you can bounce a quarter off of. Anyway, so that's the first thing that's happening is the Summer Olympics. The second thing that's happening in the Summer Olympics is Pip in the Summer Olympics. On 08-08-08 is Pip Ballantyne. Pip Ballantyne is celebrating a birthday on August 8th. whoops.
We tried to steal it.
Yeah, yeah. So we started kicking around ideas. Okay, how can we have some fun with this? How can we do something like, oh, I don't know, let's do a promo with Billy and with Billy and Puck. And while we were tossing around ideas, I found out that the sequel to Chasing the Bar, Digital Magic, was also going to be available. And I said,
well, I knew that.
You knew that. Yeah, that's how I found out.
Of all the people who should know?
Yeah. And I found out from Pip. And I was like, well, then why don't we go on ahead and do our own promo? And we discussed the pros and cons of it, but the pros seemed to really outweigh the cons. And we thought, let's go for this. And that was when the promo Billy's Crazy Eights became Double Trouble. Because our plan is we are going to send two books up the Amazon charts. And we have very lofty goals. You know, the first goal is to break into the top 100. Second goal is to break into the top 20.
Mm-hmm.
The third goal is to break into the top 5. We're just going to skip the top 10 and just go straight for the first 5. And that's where we want to see our books by the end of August 8th, 2008, somewhere in the top 5 overall for Amazon.com. And I'm very excited about this. I think we have a lot of potential to at least meet the first two goals. So I know goal number 3 is going to be a very lofty goal to shoot for. But Harry Potter, there are no new Harry Potter books. There are no new Twilight books coming out. I don't know what Oprah Winfrey's... What?
I don't know about it.
Well, yeah, but then again, we didn't know about the other ones. So, we don't have any, as far as Oprah's pick of the month, I don't know, you know. Oprah's Oprah, so hopefully she'll have her pick of the month before August 8th. but that's our goal, to see if we can get both our books into Amazon's top 5. And I'm going to sound cocky saying this, but I really think we can do it. I have that much belief. I have that much belief, not just in the two books themselves, but also in the popularity of both Pip's podcast and my podcast. The harshest podcast I've received from Moravia Remastered, which is the current podcast I'm doing, has been that my release schedule is reflecting Scott Sigler. and I say, okay, you got me on that point. As far as Billy, it seemed like a lot of people really, really enjoyed Billy. And that's very reassuring. Now, my question is, Dave, do you remember Pip's cameo? Or actually, two of Pip's appearances in the Case of the Singing Sword?
Off the top of my head, no. I'm a slacker.
Yeah.
I did crank through it in like a week, so.
You what?
I did crank through it in like a week.
Okay. So you mainlined it. Pip was the voice of the new book, of the new world book.
Yes, okay.
Pip was also the voice of the secretary, the battle axe, as Billy
at the club.
Referred to her. not at the club, but at the Ryerson, at the Ryerson
okay.
Museum. And I remember that when those episodes dropped in Skype, Pip said Billy's battle axe in her status message, and I was very touched by that.
Well, I'll ask one little question just as I listen to the show, you know, here, you know, however long behind the curve. Are you going to be bringing back most of the voices this time around? If you do, are you going to do another Billy podcast? I guess I should ask.
My Billy podcast is not going to happen until 2010.
Okay.
I mean, that's the God's honest truth, because I have Legacy of Moravia to podcast. I have Exodus from Moravia to write. And I'm also going to be producing an anthology that I know Pip is going to be contributing to called The Dragon Clan of Moravia. And I'm doing it in the same vein as the J.C. Hutchins Seventh Son Obsidian. I will not be doing the short stories. Other people will write short stories, produce them, and send them to me, and then I will just put them in the feed.
Okay. And you also want to give your book a chance to breathe on its own, too.
That, too. Yeah, that, too. You know, and now, granted, I would love to do an original podcast novel that was not put into print or has not been in print. That's been on my to-do list, but I mean, I've got a lot more hurdles to clear before then.
How many requests have you had to put Leanne in future podcasts? I'll just put it that way.
Man, that's a very tough question to answer.
I know her status is.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, you don't know what I went through before she finally came out and made her status clear.
I wasn't meant to be a Skaana.
No, Pip was never meant to be a Skaana in Moravia Remastered.
Okay.
And you know, there is a part of me that I regret not hearing Pip's Dedare. Pip was originally going to be Lady Dedare, Ascana's foil. So it was going to be Leanne and Pip facing off in one chapter. That would have been a moment for the ages.
Absolutely.
But the thing was is that I don't think I want to go down that route, but I will say I would love to be able to work with Leanne again. But I don't think it's going to happen.
Fair enough.
I got put in a very, very bad situation, and I just don't want to be in that position again.
Fair enough.
Now as far as podcasting alongside Leanne, for you know, if she ever does get back into podcasting with her own show, oh sure, I'd do a guest spot on her show. I'd chew the fat with her, absolutely.
Gotcha.
But I look back on the whole Billy experience and I'm very pleased with her performance, and I think that was part of the reason why she burned out, was because after people heard her in that, she got approached by a heck of a lot of other people. And I think that sort of pushed her over the edge, and I should probably ask Pip this. Pip, have you been approached by a lot of people since starting up the voice work for Ascaana and Moravia?
Let me see. Doing something for Indiana Jim, doing something for Dan Sawyer, doing something for Astro Audio Experience, Ascaana. Yeah, I've had to say no to some things. You gotta learn where your limits are, and
you can't extend yourself too far.
Yeah, you can. You can. It's flattering when people say, "Oh, you know, I'd love to have your voice on there," and you just think, "Oh, look, they want me. They really want me."
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
But then you think, No, I've really got to make sure it's quality rather than quantity. I'm sure that's goes back to movies as well.
This is very true.
And really, that is true. I mean, that is really, really true. I mean, it's hard to say no. It really is hard to say no. I mean, I've actually got to do some audio this weekend for both Indiana Jim and another woman named Paulette Jackson. I really need to get off my butt and do that audio, but it's hard. It's hard to make the time, and it's hard to keep the priorities straight, and it's hard to say no to people, because these are people that heard you on podcasts, respect your work. But it's a bit like the actors that seem to be doing, you know, one project after another project after another project, and they get no downtime. You need downtime.
Absolutely. You need time to recharge.
Exactly. Yes, yes, yes.
So, okay, so real quick, where can we find out more about the upcoming books and such? Obviously, we can search for both on Amazon.com, but what are your sites for getting all the latest news and such?
There's chasingthebard.com, and we have each on our blogs a separate page for Double Trouble, so you can find out all about it and download wallpapers and avatars and other nifty things. T.
Yes. Ah, yes. Yes.
You're up.
Ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Now you see how she was able to podjack the survival guide. Right now, my website, tmorris.com, is sort of, it's in the planning stages of being replaced. I'm done with the days of static pages. I'm ready to jump to just a fully blog driven, website, thank God. But right now, if you go to teamorris.com, you will see banners for many of the podcasts that I'm affiliated with. There's a banner for the Moravia podcast. There's a banner for Bilbo Baggins in the Case of the Singing Sword. And there's also a banner for a goofy little podcast that I started on a whim called Kraken's Quest. And that's the one that seems to be surprising everybody, because I'm able to keep all the episodes under 10 minutes. And that is my goal.
It's some sort of miracle.
Yes, Ball Buster Ballantyne, I like to call her. but yeah, those you will all find at tmorris.com. And if you want to keep up with me, you can always check the Moravi Podcasts blog, which the shortcut to that is just to go to moravi.net. And what we're asking people is that on August 8th, 2008, we're asking you all to go to Amazon on, and preferably we'd like for you to hit it roughly at the same time, at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So 8808 at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, because Pacific Time is, that's a pretty central location for everyone. You know, even on a global scale, you know,
gotcha.
It's later in the day. It's later in the day for people, and for Pip, that's close to midnight. So it's right on the cusp of 8 and 9 p.m. And the plan is that everybody just hits it. And the other way of telling is that Pip and I are. If you see Pip and me on Twitter, that's a good time to make your order. Granted, we're there a lot, but I mean, still, that's you know. And Pip and I are currently working out logistics right now. We should have something set in stone by Monday, and you can find out more information about this on the Chasing the Bard blog and probably on the Moravi.net blog and the blog for Billabub Battings. But we're going to do something similar to what Matthew Wayne Selznick did on Ustream with Brave Men Run. We're just going to do it with Uvu. And maybe Uvu. Yeah, and it's going to be the two of us, or something like Uvu, but we want to do some type of chat, some type of interactive chat with people, and we're going to do it in shifts, and we're going to do it all day on 8808. Details to follow, but we're still working out a lot of the logistics.
Very cool. Okay, and I'll put up all these sites in our show notes, too.
Great. Fantastic.
Yes. So, okay, well, let's cut into what's coming out next week and close this bad boy up. Wow. Okay. Theatrically, we've got The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor.
Ah.
I can't wait to see that. That's a guilty pleasure. I love those Mummy movies. I do.
I do, too. My concern is that Rachel Weisz didn't come back.
There might have been a reason.
That's kind of what I'm thinking, but, you know, the trailer looks so good. I'll probably end up seeing it.
But in all honesty, I think Rachel Weisz might be taking her career a little too seriously. Might be. Her last few films have been very heavy.
That's true, yeah. Especially The Fountain, which I loved, but yeah.
Yeah, been very heavy. And a lot of people would consider, you know, going back to that. A lot of people would consider going back to the movie like The Mummy would be sort of, or a step back. But the fact that they got, not only did they get Jet Li, I don't know why they haven't mentioned her name in the trailers.
Michelle Yeoh.
But Michelle Yeoh.
Tell me about it.
I didn't know she was in there. Okay, I've changed my mind.
yeah.
Exactly.
Michelle Yeoh. Need I say? She was in the only Brosnan Bond movie that didn't suck. I mean, Tomorrow Never Dies. That give me some of that good yo. Good yo. yo bait. I'm sorry. Am I turning your stomach, Pip? Do I need to look?
Yeah.
Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Christian Bale. Half naked in the original Batman and in the sequel.
Complete with scars. Oh, sorry. Didn't mean to cut. And then we've also
a big dog.
And then we've also got the Kevin Costner comedy Swing Vote coming up.
Yawn.
Yeah. And then very limited release, we have a Midnight Meat Train coming out. The Vinnie Jones slasher movie.
What?
Oh, yeah. You haven't heard of this?
No.
Essentially, this guy goes on a subway and watches Vinnie Jones kill somebody, and he essentially becomes a reporter just watching this guy do all these serial killings.
Huh. Well, okay then.
Yeah. So it's something to take grandma to.
Or the kids.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Let's get back into that discussion again. Okay. coming out on DVD, finally getting behind, getting on the ball, I should say. We've got a Get Smart Season 1 coming out of the classic TV show. Thank goodness. Nim's Island. I don't know why this is coming, why they even made this, but Starship Troopers 3 Marauder.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, you know why? Casper Van Diem couldn't probably sell this idea to the Sci-Fi Channel, so there you go. But I guarantee you, Sci-Fi is going to pick it up. They picked up Starship, they picked up the sequel Starship Troopers 2.
Ooh.
And that was pretty much a train wreck. But still better than the first one. Still better than the first one. Although the fact that Casper Van Diem came back for the Starship Troopers 3, I was like, oh man, he is hurting.
Yeah.
His career is hurting.
Yeah.
And it's really sad, too, because I thought he really did a lovely Brom Bones for Tim Burton in Sleepy Hollow.
Yes.
Now, he was lovely. What? What, Pip? You just chuckled at me. What? No, what?
No, I'm just what? Chuckling. I just chuckle at you generally.
Oh, that's true.
It's because he called him a man lovely.
Yeah.
Okay. We've got two more. Have you guys been watching the HD remasters of Star Trek, the original series?
Oh, yes. Nommy, nommy, nom.
Season 2 is coming out on DVD next Tuesday. Not this Tuesday, but next Tuesday. They haven't done a Blu-ray yet, but still, regular DVD will still look freaking beautiful. And then a show that I think they showed 3 episodes at most, Masters of Science Fiction, the complete series is coming out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Did you hear about this?
No, I don't know about that either.
It's essentially the same concept as Masters of Horror from Showtime.
Yeah. I vaguely remember. I remember hearing the concept, but I don't know anything else about beyond
episodes.
Yeah, I didn't get to see any of the episodes, but Will Wheaton saw a few of them just on TV, and he said it was an absolutely amazing show. So I'm really curious to check this out. I'll probably at least Netflix it. So,
yeah, that sounds.
Cool. All right. Well, let's wrap this bad boy up. If you'd like to shoot us an email, go ahead and do so. Podcast Dave, Ethan, Barry, Josh at screengeeks.com. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, you can give us a call at 719-387-1804, or you can also get through us via Skype. All that information's on our Contact Us page. And T and Pip, thank you so much for joining us this week.
This has been a lot of fun. This is, as you can tell, Pip and I will basically talk movies till the cows come home. And thank you very much. This was a fun time.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you very much. Well, well, until next week, this is Dave.
Hold back your excitement, Ballantine.
All right. Until next week, this is Dave, and take it easy.